Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
And welcome to the Movies You Love podcast, the podcast that I do every so often. I say every so often because I used to say every other week, and then I realized I continue to be horrendous at attempting to release a podcast on time. But regardless, it doesn't make a podcast any less good. That's what I'm telling myself, at least. And this week I have on my friend Christy Puchko, writer over at Cinema Blend and co-host, she co-hosts a show called The Popcorn and Prosecco. I say that because I almost said it wrong. It's the Popcorn and Prosecco podcast over at popcornprosecco.com or through YouTube. You'll find links in the show post below to go and get all of her content, which you guys should do. And she sits down to talk about Batman. And I really don't want to derail that, but like I've had this thought going through my head all day, and I guess because I kind of got into this idea of sharing more in the intro to this podcast, and I feel like I screwed up already because I spent all of the time doing the proper intro where I talk about my guest, and I'm going to get back to that in a minute, but now I'm remembering I want to share, and I've been thinking about the idea of sharing, and thinking about myself and questioning a lot of things, because I feel if, like, maybe it's because I keep thinking about work and work equals interviews to me, because I've done a lot of those over the years, because I've done jobs and needed jobs and gone for interviews for months on end to get a job, and I'm working now, thank God, which is good. And I currently have no plans to leave that job. If anyone out there is listening, no, I'm not planning to leave you yet. But who knows? Maybe the best job of the world will call me tomorrow and I'll be like, I'm out. But anyways, I'm thinking about sharing and thinking about those interviews. One of those stock interview questions people always like to ask is, what is your greatest weakness? And I was reading an article the other day talking about like how to hack interviews, how to be better at them, how to be different, unique, and at the same time still kind of PC, so you don't feel like you're offending the interviewer or make them feel like you're trying to be too smart. And one of the answers they gave to that question was that one of my greatest weaknesses was that I used to think about my greatest weakness. The logic behind it is that why would I spend all of my time improving on a weakness when I could spend all of the time making a strength more strong, which is totally viable. And going off on that tangent, it kind of got me thinking about what I feel my greatest weakness is. And I'm talking about as a person, not as a developer, not as a podcaster, not as a film lover, as a person. Was my greatest weakness, and I think if you know me better than me, then please put it in the comments, send me an email, but I think at this point one of my greatest weaknesses is sharing. I'm not that kind of guy who likes to share that much. I keep a lot of things to myself. I don't say things out loud that I feel I should. I don't tell people that I like or I love that I like or I love them more. I don't say, hey, be my friend. I always kind of imagine all of these things being tangential and just occurring on the side, as opposed to us having to say it out loud. And I've been thinking about that a lot, and I feel like that's probably one of my greatest weaknesses. And I guess at this point I just want to say I hope, because herein lies that thing, like going back to that article, talking about the idea of responding with the greatest weakness is working on my greatest weakness or thinking about my greatest weakness. And I think in this regard I completely disagree with them. I think it's a perfectly wonderful answer for a job interview. It's smart, it's funny, it'll get people, it'll set the interviewee off post, and he might end up taking you down a rabbit hole of conversation, which, on a side note, if you're doing a job interview, it's what I consider the best tactic of getting hired. It's finding a way to break the interviewee away from his script and get him into a real conversation, because that'll make you memorable and all sorts of things. But getting back to my point, talking about the article, I feel in this personal space that that might be the worst thing I could say about my greatest weakness, that I was thinking about my greatest weakness, because I feel like it's something I need to work more on. I feel like I need to work more on my ability to share with the people around me, and not just share my things or share a movie with them, even though that I always like to do, where I'm like, hey, come over and let's watch a movie and I'm going to show you this great thing and hope that you like it. But just share myself with people. And I don't know why I'm talking about this, guys. I just got it on my mind, and I feel like since this is the place that I feel like I'm testing the waters on this whole sharing thing, I feel like it's a good place to talk about it to begin with. But yeah, that's what's been on my mind, guys, sharing. Because, you know, when you're a child, people always tell you sharing is caring. Well, I think about that more and more these days. But anyways, moving on. And talking about introducing this episode again, once again, I want to throw out a thank you to Christy Futchko. This episode was recorded a while back, like about a month ago. Listening back to it, I'm like, oh, those are all things that happened to me a month ago that I'm talking to Christy about. And Christy is amazing. We talked about Tim Burton's Batman. If you want to hear someone talk about their love for Tim Burton's Batman and questionable critiques, I don't want to say she hated it, because that is not true. I don't want to put those words in her mouth. But we definitely had some criticisms for the latest Batman movies, and we talked about them. We talked about all sorts of things. We talked about parenting in the media. So, I mean, if you guys felt you needed an all-in-one place to find out people talking about movies in crazy-ass eras, then this is a podcast for you. And you get to hear me babble on about my thoughts about my personal sharing policy. I'm going to share more, guys. I'm going to share more. But totally, as I said, Christy Futchko, you can find all of her work over at Cinema Blend and over at popcornprosecco.com through the Popcorn and Prosecco podcast, which is on YouTube. And also, guys, this podcast, it's on iTunes. Go rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. But I'm going to get past all this and say, here, enjoy the conversation, and here we go.
Vicky Vale.
Bruce Wayne.
And what do you do for a living?
Lieutenant, is there a 6-foot bat in Gotham City?
Nice outfit.
You look fine.
I didn't ask. I have given a name to my pain.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I think it's best we just kind of jump into this if you're ready to go.
Yeah, totally.
Because Christy, and let me ask, just for my clarification, because oddly enough, I cannot find this anywhere, because everywhere you're listed as Christy. Is it Crystal or Kristen?
It's Christy.
Christy, that's it.
That's the extent of my name, yeah. It's Christy Puchko.
Okay. Christy, you have asked me to come on here and us to talk about probably one of my favorite childhood movies.
Nice.
And I find it interesting that it's taken nearing a year and a half of doing this podcast for someone to hit a movie like this for me.
That makes me judge everyone else. I was shocked this wasn't picked. I was shocked.
You have brought us together to discuss the 1989 Tim Burton Batman. I don't even want to start by asking the question I generally start by, but I want to start somewhere differently. I want to ask you, for a movie like this, where I'm going to assume that at the point in time when you saw this movie, it wasn't really about craft or anything. It was just about pure adventure and pure enjoyment of movies itself. And as you've grown as a film lover and kind of gone down the rabbit hole of not just Tim Burton, but movies which feel into this category of movies that are just of joy and not of just craft, what is it that's pop? What is it that makes you appreciate Batman more as a memory as opposed to the movies you're seeing today?
Wow, that's a big question. I have to start off by confessing that actually, and this is going to sound really initially pretentious, it is part of the craft was why this movie stuck with me so much. This movie came out in 1989 and I would have been 7. I can't pretend that I understood what the movie, like how it came together, but that's exactly why it's such a big memory for me, is that my dad really wanted to watch this, and it was PG-13. I was 7, and if you watch this movie now, I think it's kind of crazy that it's PG-13. It just seems still really dark and violent to me, even though by today's standards, it's totally PG-13. But to watch it together, he basically had to kind of talk me through it. And like, you know, so that I wasn't terrified out of my mind, he would explain to me that the Joker was not a real person, that he is a guy named Jack Nicholson, and that this is all created with makeup. And he was like explaining to me all these things about who these people are. And like, he told me who Michael Keaton was. And, like, Michael Keaton is still one of my all time favorite actors. And like, I have not yet met Michael Keaton in my job, but that's on my like to-do list. That's going to happen. I'm making that happen.
Oh, he has a movie coming out later this year.
He does.
You can fill that in.
I'm working on that. Also, Michael Keaton, like, grew up near-ish where I grew up, so there's, like, a whole other level of, like, why I'm obsessed with Michael Keaton. It's, like, a thing. But anyway, but so watching the movie with my dad, we watched it together, and he was explaining to me about how the guys who were getting shot weren't really getting shot, and he, like, told me what squibs were. Like, it was a really involved conversation while we were watching this on VHS. And it stuck with me. Like, it was so cool to me that this story that was so engaging and to me really scary, even though the whole time my dad's in my ear being like, it's all pretend, this is fine. And for him, he's doing this so he can just watch this movie without getting hell from my mom, I think, being like, why are you showing her this? And, you know, he's explaining all this to me and I was just sucking it all in of like, you know, it was so much cooler to me that this wasn't just a thing that was real. Like, you know, you're as a kid, you're kind of parsing apart what's real and what's a story, and that it was a fantasy we could create, you know, like Penn and Teller talk about it a lot, where to them, the magic of a magic trick is not the success of the trick. It's discovering how it was done. And like, for me, that's why Batman is just it's a watershed moment in my childhood where, you know, movies all of a sudden weren't these incredible, like, weren't just incredible stories. They were also this incredible craft. And while I was, like, just at the very, very beginning of understanding what any of that meant, it was astounding. And, like, I watched Batman again today to prepare for this, and, like, it still stands up. I mean, Tim Burton created iconography that we're still pulling from. And I know he pulled from the comics, obviously, but there's, like, a lot in that movie that, you know, set up what superhero movies today are still trying to do. Like, there are these huge moments. There are these shots that are just, you know, blazoned on our memory. And he created a villain, like a villain who is just so off the wall and so fascinating. And he created a hero who is both an everyman, despite the fact that he's a billionaire, but also deeply flawed and kind of frightening. So he's like us, but he's not like us. Like, there's just so many rich elements to 1989's Batman that it's still stupendous filmmaking. And, you know, the fact that, like, superhero movies weren't, you know, kind of like now I feel like there's almost a formula to making a superhero movie, which, like, Guardians of the Galaxy is totally subverted a bit, but there's still this kind of concept of these notes you want to hit so that audiences will be happy. And, like, Tim Burton didn't really have that because the prior superhero movies hadn't really hit the way this one did. Like, this was a landmark moment. And, you know, he took so many risks in it. It's crazy. Like, I mean, everybody wants to talk bad about Ben Affleck as Batman. Nobody wanted Michael Keaton as Batman, and he's amazing. He's still my favorite Batman. Like, the rest of it be damned. Whatever. Chris Nolan, whatever. I don't care. Michael Keaton's my Batman. Like, period. End of sentence.
I mean, whilst the internet forums, that is a comment board, will constantly bring up the Christopher Nolan world, I still feel that Michael Keaton flipping out in that right by that fireplace,
yeah, in front of Jack Nicholson,
might be the best 2 minutes of Batman ever.
Yeah, I think it's a really important moment because it shows us this moment between, like, it's where Bruce Wayne and Batman connect, where you see him go from being this totally cool and composed millionaire who seems like a pretty cool guy, like maybe a little socially awkward. He doesn't seem to understand how to date, but like then in this moment you see him cross that dark line, and it's really fucking cool.
So you talk about, and I feel kind of semi-horrible now because I started out trying not to go into your own very much origin story with this movie, and we just dive straight into it.
Sorry, it's so crucial to understanding, like, why Batman means this to me. And it's funny because, like, I don't consider myself especially into comic book movies. Like, I like them. I write about them every day, but that's just kind of, like, if you write about movies today, you're writing about comic book movies every day. But, like, I'm not, I don't know, I don't consider myself an especially aggressive fan about them, but, like, Batman was just... I think it's because it took the world I knew and took it to this weird place that was both familiar and strange to me and totally sold it to me. I mean, it's what made me a Tim Burton devotee from, like, you know, first grade.
Do you find yourself still a Tim Burton devotee or someone
No.
who just pines for Tim Burton of the years old?
Yeah, I've written a lot about how Tim Burton makes me sad now. But like, old school Burton was amazing. Like, old school Tim Burton, you had Batman, you had Beetlejuice, you had Edward Scissorhands. Nightmare Before Christmas, he technically didn't direct, he produced, but like, people give him credit for that, that's fine. Batman Returns is my favorite Batman movie altogether. So like, I have a deep affection for his stuff. His later stuff, it just, I watched so much of it this weekend prepping for a piece, and like, it just doesn't hold up the way the old stuff does. And I do think a certain amount of my affection for early Tim Burton is certainly what it meant to me as a kid. But I still think there's really good crafts and real craft and interesting ideas in the earlier Tim Burton stuff. And then he just kind of started riffing on his own, like, you know, it's like he had this box of toys he just kept dumping out and using again and again. It was like, well, no, but we've seen this. And it's like, he hasn't been doing it in exciting variants anymore. Like, oh, Frankenweenie and Dark Shadows were two of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Well, bringing it back to Batman and not discussing so much Tim Burton's own demise for some reason, where we hope he'll rise like a phoenix once again. I'm very curious. You mentioned that even today you still are not quite the comic book individual. And this movie did a lot for you. When you saw this movie, how much of a shock was it to be seeing something this different from what you were primarily watching at the time?
I think it was also that what I was watching at the time were mostly things aimed at kids, but I was kind of stepping my way up to more mature fare. But, you know, at the time, there were I was watching a lot of Jim Henson stuff, including things like The Dark Crystal, and I watched The Secret of Nim obsessively, and like, those are dark stories. Like, people like to think like kids can't handle dark stories, but they make sense to kids because when you're a child, there's so much you don't understand that there's a certain level of fear just innate in your existence, and these movies gave you something to be scared of and to lock onto. So like, that all made sense to me, and then to walk into Batman, where I just like, Michael Keaton just made so much sense to me. Like, Bruce Wayne and all of that, I liked that he was someone who had gone through something terrible, and in a very weird way, like, as an adult, Batman story is kind of disturbing. Like, he didn't create a foundation or something to, like, take down crime in Gotham. He dresses like a bat and does it himself. It's kind of deranged. But, like, as a kid, it felt really kind of empowering to imagine that you could face something scary and make yourself a hero. And I think that's still why superhero movies are so exciting to us. And like, especially Batman, because like, Batman's not Superman. Like, Superman is like born to greatness. Superman just has all these powers that the rest of us don't and won't ever have. Batman is his toys. Batman is his intellect. Batman is his fearlessness and his tenaciousness or tenacity. You know, he is his skills, not his powers.
That,
and I think that just doesn't get old.
Definitely. So, taking us back to the time when you first saw this movie, you mentioned it was something that your father shared with you. I'm very curious as to how a move, how your relationship with your father continued over the years as it related to movies. Was it always a thing for him to be like, here is the next chapter in our movie discussion?
You know, it's funny because my dad's not like, he's not a cinephile. Like, he gets really bored with things and will just shut them off, which is something like I have a hard time doing. And he doesn't keep up with movies now. I think it was more like, you know, I mean, my parents had me when they were like in their early 20s. So I think it's like pop culture was still very much a part of his everyday life. And now he's kind of, he knows what he likes and he'll see certain things, but like more often it's me being like, you need to see this. But like he, it's more that it's not so much that my dad was into movies as my dad is into just curiosity and puzzles of things. So it's like he looks at something and he wants to understand how it works and how it's put together. And that was something he really impressed upon me. And while I think I share his intellectual curiosity, I went with movies in a way both my parents were pretty surprised by. And they were both super supportive. I feel I should point out, like, they were just unbelievably generous in driving me to video stores because I'm from a time where that's how you saw movies.
And, like, guys, in case you thought Netflix was invented 50 years ago.
I don't know what kids today, I know I sound like I'm 70 years old, but I don't know what kids today do. But like, for me, you know, that was like a big thing, going to the video store and wandering around and looking through cases and finding the weirdest thing I could find and taking it home. Like, that was a big discovery moment. And I don't really understand, I don't know how it works today. Like, I know you can look online for things, but that almost feels like cheating. There's so much information. Like, I was going off a battered box with like a misspelled title and whatever. But like, which also explains why I like bad movies, which we were talking about before we started recording. But like, I don't have like a preference. I can, I'll dig into anything that kind of, anything that's just, I don't know, anything that catches my imagination, I'll dive into. And, but when it comes to my parents, like, they were really supportive and they, you know, they took me to the video store and they were really helpful about driving me to the movies when new things came out. And, you know, they, supported me going to film school. And, actually the first short film I ever shot, I went home from, I came to New York City to go to school. And then I went home to shoot my first short in my hometown. And they were exhaustively helpful. Like, I mean, my dad became our key grip and gaffer, and he was just fascinated by the whole process. And it was kind of a full circle moment for me, where him introducing me to the idea of filmmaking, then I introduced it into my childhood home, and we shot all over my parents' apartment or my parents' home. And, you know, my dad was running around and finding power sources for us and watching dailies with us and helping us wrangle. My mom was like a location scout for us and also our catering crew. And, you know, they've always been really great about not just being supportive of me, but trying to understand, my obsession and fascination with film. And, you know, I regularly credit with them. Like, it wasn't just that they showed me movies. It was that they encouraged me that, you know, these are puzzles that I could figure out.
I so often remind people that when they're looking at all of these things and they're seeing surface level, that I find it fascinating to look at everything as a problem solving exercise. And it's a weird thing that's been happening with me recently. I'm going off into a weird tangent right now. But it's kind of because you're talking about all these things that I find myself more and more, bored with problem solving when I solve the problem and 2 months later, I'm still working on enacting a solution as opposed to moving to the next problem. And I find myself worried that I am going to mess myself up in this world by not being able to stick to one problem.
I think that's a very common thing. You know, it's especially in the age of the internet, it's like on a given day, you can present yourself with just an infinite amount of issues. So, you know, I think that's kind of why I like film, because it's like, no matter what happened during the day, usually 3 times a week, at least I have screenings, and my only obligation for that time is to sit down and engage with the movie and figure it out.
So talking about the actual film of Batman for a minute, not that I have no problem discussing everything else, I'm kind of curious that you talk so heavily about the craft, you talk so heavily about the fact that previous to this, it was just stories to you. Tim Burton in himself, for all of his films, the good, the bad, and the worst, has always been a man about craft. And I'm very curious, when was it that during this movie you stopped seeing a story and you start seeing craft? Was there a specific scene? Was there a specific moment? Could you even remember it at this point?
I think it would probably be the introduction of the Joker as the Joker. I mean, that scene is so upsetting. And it's, you know, I mean, it's been parodied a million times. Now we're rerunning The Simpsons nonstop, and there's that episode where Lisa gets braces and they parody it. It's just, you see this guy trying to piece together who he was, and then he's confronted with what he is. And it's like, Nicholson handles that kind of snap of going from Jack Napier to the Joker so brilliantly. And, you know, it's a transformative moment, and like the way it's shot, the way it's lit, and then the eventual design of the Joker. That Joker design is incredible. And I also want to just point out that Kim Basinger just doesn't get enough credit for how good she is in this movie, because everybody's talking about Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, and Jack Nicholson defined the Joker for decades, and Michael Keaton did the same for Batman. Totally true. Vicki Vale, I think people want to overlook because she was kind of silly and screamed a lot. But when you watch that movie again, like, Vicki Vale, she came to Gotham to just understand what's going on with the Batman, which, like, is kind of a ballsy thing to do. She was a fashion photographer who became a war reporter and started, like, taking photos on the front lines. She screams a lot because the things that happen are alarming, and frankly, her screaming helps us engage with these things that you should be screaming at. Someone just shot, you know, for instance, acid at your face. But, like, she's smart and she's savvy, and there's one point where, in the big finale, Batman is trying to sneak up on the Joker and she sees him, and later Aladdin and Jasmine pull the same little thing where she pretends that she's super into the Joker so that Batman can have the advantage and the element of surprise. And she says she's like so into purple, and it made me laugh so hard watching it, because it's like Kim Basinger just, she gets this. She understood what this was. They manipulated this tone that's, you know, hard. It's trying to be a man in a bat suit and not make it ridiculous, like make the audience buy it. And I mean, it's funny because like Pierce Brosnan just came out and admitted he was offered this part and said the whole thing just seemed too ridiculous, so he turned it down.
That's amazing. I never heard that.
Oh, that just came out. Like, he just admitted it. I feel like you have to let a couple of decades pass when you pass on Batman. But like, that's an interesting thought. But like, you know, I'm glad it's Michael Keaton. Like, for me, this just, this movie's so much about Michael Keaton. But like, yeah, it's such a rich movie with like, from the costume designs, which then in Batman Returns, like Burton had even a bigger budget and even more like leeway where they were just like, do your thing. And like, Tim Burton's Catwoman is just one of my favorite cinematic creations of all time. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer is just perfection. And like, I love how when Catwoman does flips, her heels disappear. Like, it's just one of her superpowers. We're just going to allow that and go with it. There's just.
I have to watch that movie again now. I have it and I've seen it a billion times, but I've never noticed the heels.
Yeah, when she does, it's when she does the flip to come over where Batman and the Penguin are arguing right before Shrek's apartment building blows up, and she goes like that, like meow. When she does that flip, she doesn't have heels because that would be impossible to do. And then when she's standing there, she does. It's great. I have no problem with it. It's one of the things that I just completely, I love and adore about that movie, where I'm just like, fine and cool with it. Like, it's just, you know, that's like Batman and Batman Returns. I think Batman might be a better movie because Batman Returns is just its own weird little exploration.
There is like, something to be said about adding points to a movie because Chris Walken is in it, though.
Oh, no, totally. And he's so good. Like, the Einstein hair, like, Batman Returns is just, I love it completely. Like, Batman got me on the path to love it, so, like, really appreciating movies as a craft. Batman Returns, I think that's what I could really credit me with, like, starting my interest in, like, comic book movies, because, like, man, that's just, and also, like, it gave you a superhero or heroine or villainess or whatever, but, like, Catwoman was also a big defining thing. Like, she was just so cool and so weird, and She got to be pretty and dangerous in a way I had not seen in movies that I was allowed to see yet. So, like, that was all a very big deal.
I had a thought, and now it's gone. It was about Purple. Oh, yeah. You were talking about that very scene at the end with Vicky Vale going, I'm so into Purple. And this weird thing happened when I was watching this movie for the 1,000th time the other night. And I saw this tiny moment when she got into the scene and started just playing with the Joker. And she was kissing his jacket going up the arm. And she just stops, and you can see her taking cotton out of her mouth or something.
Yeah.
And, like, something about that moment just made me laugh to no avail.
No avail, Vicky Vale. I like it.
I think that should be her name from now. Vicky No Avail Vale.
I like it. I approve. it's so good. It's just, like... The chemistry all just works for me, and like there's that really funny scene in Batman where it's Bruce Wayne and Vicky Vale. He invited her over for dinner, and they're sitting at long ends of this at opposite ends of this really long table, which is another visual gag I've seen repeated a bunch since then. It may have been predated, I don't know. This was the first time I had noticed it, and it's just really funny where they're trying to talk, and I think she asked him to pass the salt. And he has to, like, walk the whole way to the end of the table. And she's like, do you ever eat in here? And he's like, no. And it's just like he was trying to impress her, but he went about it in the completely wrong way. It's like, you're the wealthiest man in Gotham. Take her to a nice restaurant. Why are you sitting in this weird, you know, it's just, it's so kind of, but I mean, that's why you like him, is that, like, Bruce Wayne isn't together either. And, you know, that's something that, like, the two of them started exploring. And, I mean, they created an on-screen character that people wanted to continue to explore. And I think, you know, there's a lot of, you can, like, there's, this movie's so rich with possibilities for the story of Bruce Wayne and Batman that, like, you know, I think looking back, you can totally understand where all these variations came from.
Oddly enough, watching this movie, the other night, one thing that kind of caught my eye is that something that I honestly believe is the reason why this Batman movie might just outlive any other one. And I'm putting that on record, guys. I think this movie will outlive all of your Dark Knights. I love them to death, but I feel this movie might win out. And it's because of how much of a dark comedy this movie really is, right? We skip over all of the, pretty much 80% of the origin story nonsense that we have to sit through in every comic book movie today.
Yeah, and they tease it in the first scene, but then you quickly realize that it's just kind of a nod.
Yeah, we just kind of, like, everything works out. And so much of this movie plays off as a joke. And it's not just because we're talking about a story of Batman versus the Joker, but little things like you mentioned Michael Keaton in the dining room. You see moments where Robert Wool, who to this day I can never stop calling Arliss, when they're at that party in Batman's house, and they're just kind of coming into this room and seeing all these lavish costumes and things that obviously this wealthy man obtained all across the world, and just kind of making jokes about it. There's even this tiny moment when you get to see that scene that I talked about earlier in our conversation about when Michael Keaton just snaps. And something about it is funny to me, and I don't know why. Like, Tim Burton plays his own brand of comedy in 80% of his movies, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. This movie, I feel, is probably one of the best of his versions of comedy just coming out, mainly because of the dark tone nature of Batman himself. This movie, unlike any other Batman movie, is where Batman as a character kills the most people, and it's something people like to joke about as we're moving forward in this PG-13-ified movie world where we have to pretend like death isn't a real thing anymore.
I mean, I think that's so much. One, it's MPAA related, where if you don't show blood, you can kind of get away with anything, which drives me nuts. Like, I've actually written an article on Cinema Blend a couple years ago at this point about how I think it's actually insane that the Dark Knight is PG-13, because there's a scene in that movie where someone gets shot full on in the chest with a shotgun, and just falls out of frame. Like, there's no blood, they just fall out of frame. And, like, I made the joke in the article and said, remember, kids, guns don't kill people, they just make people fall down. Like, the MPAA wants to try to project this idea that they're protecting children from violence, but they're not. They're protecting children from the consequences of violence, which is blood, which is gore, which is death. And so I think it's a really twisted situation that the MPAA has set up. And it's deeply rooted that, like, if you show violence but not blood, you can get away with it. And, like, in this movie, you know, they throw people off buildings and things. And yes, there would be more blood or whatever, but that's not really what this movie's about. And at least, like, I don't know. I don't like that the new Batman we're supposed to think is so gritty and edgy when he doesn't kill people, which I know that's a thing in the comics. Apparently, he doesn't kill people in most incarnations or whatever. This is my Batman. So I just, the comics don't really affect me as a source point, frankly, which I know. I know. I've gotten yelled at a lot.
Don't worry, Christy. Every listener right now, every five of them, are immediately taking away your nerd card because you're talking about Batman and you refuse to read the comics. But let me.
I refused. I just think they're never as interesting to me. I just, you know, I
get you. And honestly, when you're talking about comic books, and this is something that's really weird for me because as a child, my father was very into comic books and specifically Marvel, and it was really just a few of them, like Spider-Man and Thor. And Captain America, and those were the few that I got to read. Like, I would see a few of the monthlies come in, and I'd get to read some of those. But as I'm growing older, like, I went through a stage of going into Japanese manga, going into comic books there, and coming back now to some of the American books, more and more I find myself going through this world where I'm realizing that, and I find this fascinating as a film lover and now someone who's kind of sort of into comic books, where in the world of comic books, which is where movies are stealing from left, right, and center, comic books allow for themselves to have parallel universes and canon can jump off a cliff on a weekly basis only for the sake of an interesting story and just someone doing something cool, while film producers and the fans of movies almost hate the idea of there not being a canon and not having something to adhere to. Mm-hmm. And it drives me wild on a weekly basis, mainly because I have to hear those people talk every day.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is people want to act like people who love the comics are the purest fans of these superheroes. But honestly, at this point, we have so many superhero movies. If someone really loves the movies, that isn't, like, that's, you know, I don't believe in the idea that one fandom is better than another. I think fandom is a great thing. As long as it's not abusive, there are obviously limits. But, you know, I'm not a person that's going to judge someone on their, you know, you joked about nerd cred. And I mean, that's something that, like, I've had people accuse me of on various things and, like, whatever. Like, I don't care if people think that I'm the right kind of Batman fan. Like, I love Batman. I think Batman Returns is the best. I don't care if anyone else disagrees with me. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I'm not impressed because someone's read all the Batman comics. I, you know, good for them. If that's your thing, that's fantastic. But, like, I think, you know, I've always been interested in movies. And for me, a movie above anything else should be playable as a movie. And if, you know, a movie can speak to comic book fans through various ways, that's awesome. That's like gravy for those people. And I'm totally fine with that. But more than anything, I want a movie to speak to me as a movie.
You brought up the idea of violence in this movie and violence in the current gritty Batman movies. And I'm kind of curious. I think at this point I should make a drinking game for this podcast where I say, I'm kind of curious. There is this comedian who I haven't really seen much of, but he kind of surfaced on the internet. His name is Pete Holmes, and he did these series of sketches, some for College Humor, where he does like a Batman parody. And there was this very popular sketch where Patton Oswalt featured as the Penguin, and it was basically a joke explaining violence to children. It came about, I think, around the time of one of the more recent school shootings. I can't remember which one. And guys, that in itself is a very scary statement. The joke was going on that Batman was going on I don't kill and murdering people, saying he's just gone to sleep for the whole sketch. he would take up his batarang and throw it, and then it would hit the guy in the face. You'd see the blood fall, and he'd die. And he'd be like, "No, he's asleep." And Commissioner Gordon, or Commissioner Gordon, and the Penguin, played by Patton Oswalt, would be standing there attempting to explain death to Batman, which is an amazing bit, and I love it. And yeah. From the sound of your voice, it sounds like you're not very familiar with this bit.
No, that one I haven't seen. I'll have to look that up. But I mean, like, yeah, I take a major issue when people want to act like you can make a movie extremely violent and still have a PG-13. I think that's really intellectually dishonest. You know, I didn't see Expendables 3. I know that was a recent point of departure on this argument where people were saying, like, I heard in the end, like, literally 500 people get murdered and it's PG-13. And for me, I actually do think it's a problem because, you know, people want to talk about Christopher Nolan's work like it's never, ever been compromised. But every studio movie, I don't believe that there is a studio movie made today that doesn't have some sort of compromise. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem because I think film is collaborative. But in the case of The Dark Knight, I think one scene that you will never convince me. I don't care if Christopher Nolan personally looks me in the eye and is like, "That's how I wanted it. I'm not going to buy it." There's one scene that is, it just seems like such an egregious compromise to me. And it's the one where the Joker does the magic pen, or not the magic pencil trick. It's the part where he basically cuts open Gamble, I think is his name, this big, black,
yeah, when he comes gangster. Out from the, he's in the garbage bag and wakes up.
Yes.
And
yeah, so he basically threatens him, and then he holds, like, a knife to his face, and then they cut away. There's a weird sound. Some random, like, extra makes a face like, "Oh, my," and then Gamble falls out of frame. Now, that scene doesn't make any damn sense.
So, all right.
Clearly, I think what is suggested is that he slits open his face like his is, which one wouldn't kill him. It would be upsetting, but it wouldn't kill him. That doesn't really make sense. But, like, it's clearly a scene that's meant to project violence without showing violence. And I think it's poorly done. And I think the reason it's poorly done is because the MPAA probably gave notes that said, like, you can't show X, Y, and Z. And it's a ridiculous looking scene. And I've had, like, Nolan devotees, like, yell at me about that online. And whatever, again, to each his own. I think that scene is a clear example where, like, the MPAA's demand that something look a certain way to get a PG-13 movie collides with studios' demand of having movies like this be PG-13 so that they can get a wider audience, makes a movie worse.
I agree with you, but herein lies a small counterpoint, because I agree all movies are compromises. I don't think any studio movie really has that much say. I mean, I do feel like people like Christopher Nolan slowly but surely get more weight with their decisions as they go along. But I'm kind of curious, how bad is it for the movie itself, right, in the world of The Dark Knight to have that versus a movie made in 1940 where they socially are not allowed to do those kinds of things?
I don't think it's different. I think it's the same level of censorship. I think we're deciding what moviegoers want to see before they have a chance to see it, and I think that sucks, frankly. I mean, you know, people want to talk about American movies can do whatever we want, but that's not true. We have, like, the MPAA, it's the MPAA was created so that the Hays Code would go away. We basically said, like, Hollywood was basically saying they didn't want the government stepping in and deciding what was okay for the movies to happen in the movies. And so they created the MPAA. And the MPAA is a super shady organization that holds way too much power. And, like, to them, violence is fine and boobs are atrocities and the F word has limits. And, like, there's all these bizarre rules that apply to the entire nation, despite the fact that, like, our cultural mores are different in L.A., New York, and, you know, in the Midwest. Like, if in the Midwest, if people are more concerned about sexual content, then have a different rating system for the Midwest. But no one wants to, like, put that kind of thought into things because that would be confusing for advertising and et cetera, et cetera. So you have this deeply flawed system that creates this huge umbrella where we create incredibly violent movies but take away the blood, and then they can be PG-13. But then you're showing kids incredibly violent movies that have been drained of the consequences of violence. And I find that to be a big problem. Like, I'm not going to go so far as to act like, you know, those kind of movies would make violence more acceptable necessarily, but I think it presents a really screwed up concept to children. you know, if you're just going to have people firing guns willy-nilly and all the time, like, why are we especially surprised when, you know, like, I just don't know that the consequences are being registered in film. And it's, I hate blaming movies for things, but I think it feeds into a culture where, I think it feeds into a dangerous gun culture. I'll say that. I am taking you all over the world talking about Batman today.
You see, this takes me into a very deep argument that I've had with a lot of older individuals, about the gun culture and movies and media's effect on the gun culture. I actually was having a similar conversation as it related to sexuality when it came to media, because someone was talking to me earlier today about the VMAs that happened last night, which of course I didn't watch. And he was telling me about Beyoncé's performance, where she opened her legs, and this was such a horrible thing for children to be seeing. And, like, herein lies the thing, guys. Like, regardless of how horrible we can interpret all of these elements to be, whether it being that we're discussing it from a child's point of view, where they're misunderstanding that there aren't any consequences to violence, or we should all dance as if we are Nicki Minaj in the Anaconda video. And guys, please don't Google that. If you have not seen it yet, save yourself the time. The thing I always tell people is that media isn't a parent. You are the parent. You're the person. And I say this with a lot of calm and a lot of, I'm open to criticism, because I, unlike the people who are having this argument with me most times, I myself am not a parent. I have many younger people in my family who I may have similar conversations with, but I find it more important for parenting to be an element of someone's life than for someone to allow media to do this to them. I'm not saying that we shouldn't allow children to see this media, or we should allow them. That is up to the parent to decide. And yeah, more importantly... More importantly than that, when what happens is that the child actually gets to interact with this media, whether it be outside of your home or inside of your home, it's about the conversation that happens after, where you try to make the child understand all of these things he or she doesn't. That is more important than cursing the media for allowing someone who had a thought, who had an idea, who wanted to express it through either shooting someone in the face and not having blood appear, or Beyoncé spreading her legs. Guys, talk to your kids.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. My, that's the thing. The MPAA wants to raise the rallying cry that they're for parents and they're helping parents. And it's like, but my thing is that you're not, because PG-13 doesn't mean anything anymore. So, like, how is a parent supposed to know? Like, I mean, I have people write to me directly via email and Twitter asking me, you know, after reading a review, well, can my 5-year-old see this? Can my 7-year-old see this? And basically I write them back and say, like, here's the things I remember that might give your kid pause. Like, that's up to you. Like, it's because everyone has their different qualms. And, like, you know, I completely agree that I don't think movies can be blamed for violence. But I think it's a bullshit thing to act like movies can be blamed for violence and the solution is to make movies less bloody, not less violent. That's a weird conversation. But anyway, my issues with the MPAA, not with violent movies, but rather the censorship that I think just makes movies less interesting, frankly. But, you know, back to Batman, that's part of why my dad explained these movies to me and would sit down and we would talk about how these movies are put together. It was because, you know, I was getting freaked out. Batman's a pretty intense movie if you're, you know, a kid. And I mean, I don't even know if by today's standards, I don't have to think about that. But, like, I remember being really freaked out because the Joker is still upsetting. Like, there's a scene where Vicky Vale throws water on Joker's face when he has his face painted, like, flesh colored, but he still has that horrific smile. And he, like, pretends he's melting and it's really upsetting looking. And then he wipes away part of it. And you can see that his real face is the white and that he's put on makeup to look quote unquote normal. And, like, all of that is really jarring. And it's like, to have my dad next to me explaining that it was all pretend is an important part of me experiencing that movie. I also want to point out that is not a part of the experience of the movie that should have gone on in a theater, and it didn't. It went on at home. We like, because that is another huge pet peeve of mine, when people take their children who do need to have the movie explained to them because they are young and can't comprehend the fantasy and all the things that are going on. Don't take them to the movie. You can rent it with them later. Like, I went to see, again, Dark Knight. Oh, God. So Dark Knight, there's the part, Dark Knight. Okay, so spoilers if you haven't seen Dark Knight, which I don't even, whatever. There's a part where...
Spoilers for comic books that have been out for 100 years.
Right. Keep so going. There's the part where, what is his girlfriend, that Maggie Gyllenhaal? What was her name in that? Rachel.
Yeah.
Rachel's in a warehouse and...
There's the explosions.
Yeah, he tries to save her and he fails and the place explodes. And, like, the theater is dead silence. Like, we've just witnessed Batman's girlfriend blown to pieces. There's dead silence and you hear a teeny tiny child's voice go, "Is she gonna be okay?" And, like, some people laughed, but I got really mad. Because that ruin moment got ruined because someone brought their kid. And it's not the kid's fault. The kid was having an honest reaction to the movie, and I'm not mad at the child for that. I'm mad at the parent who brought that kid, because now is not the time to explain that, because you were surrounded by 100 other people who paid to see that movie. They don't want to hear you play parent right now. So, like, Batman also instilled in me what is appropriate in theaters and what is good for home. If you're not sure if your kid can handle a movie like this, you know, wait until it comes out on DVD where you guys can talk about it and pause and, like, you know, take a breather if things get too scary. That's totally acceptable. And, like, especially nowadays where movies come out on DVD and VOD so fast after release. It's
when
fine.
Movies come out on the Department of Defense every month.
I don't.
I'm sorry. You accidentally said DOD for a second and I just.
Oh, DOD. I couldn't
hold it.
No, that's fine. I was just like, what? Do they? What?
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing that I see from time to time. I tend to get most angry at babies, because just like children, I have absolutely no right to complain to the child, but the baby even more, because this mother couldn't get a babysitter that night, and she decided to bring him to the horror movie of the week. But, you know,
yeah,
that's
my favorite. I went to see Prometheus, and someone brought an infant, and every time it cried, the guy stood in his, like, where he was sitting, he stood and rocked it back to sleep, and then would sit back down. I was seething.
Don't you love those moments where you actually just give up watching the movie?
I had already seen that one. I was going again to take friends, but, like, I was really furious because I just thought, like, that's so disrespectful to the other people in the theater. What is the likelihood that your baby is going to be quiet for 2 hours? Like,
My favorite moment, and I was talking to this, one of my favorite moments in this movie, and I was talking about this with my brother while we were watching it, is when after the Joker has released his makeup, chemical plan to the world, and you see the news as it happened versus a week after when no one is using makeup.
Yeah.
You just see the news.
But Vicky Vale still looks great, by the way, which either means...
That was natural.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's either natural or, like, she traveled in at the beginning of the movie, so it's still possible that she just has her own product still.
I was looking more closely to Billy Dee Williams, who... Like, there's no debate at that point. He just had it stockpiled, and he was going off of his...
He's a prepared Harvey Dent. Imagine if they had recast him as Harvey Dent when they, like, if they had cast him again as Harvey Dent, that would have been awesome.
As Harvey Dent's father, Harvey Dent adopted Aaron Eckhart as a child.
Yeah. Harvey Dent Sr.
Yeah. And he's just giving him tips on how to be a better mayor/attorney in the movie. But Christy, I want to thank you so much for coming and talking with me this week.
I was happy to do it, man. I just went to a lot of places I didn't necessarily expect. But, I mean, I think we were relatively relevant to the topic at hand.
There was Batman, and there were other things that happened during that. Which seems a lot like your experience with seeing Batman for the first time.
Yeah. It was, like I said, you were like, what got you into movies? And it's like, it was a very formative moment watching Batman. In a lot of levels, apparently. We've unpacked a lot today. I've learned a lot about myself.
Those are always the best conversations. I think the first time I saw Batman, I was... And like, I didn't really assume there was an age gap, but I was 4 years old. And I believe my father took my family to the drive-in to watch it.
That's also totally acceptable. I'm going to point that out. If you want to take people at, like, drive-ins, I know they aren't around as much anymore, which is a damn shame. But drive-ins are totally cool, because then you're in your own little theater in your car, and if your kid wants to be loud or whatever, it's within your own parameter. Totally fine. On board with that.
For those people interested in Jamaica movie-going history, the last film that played at a drive-in in Jamaica was the Jet Li film Hero. I know this because I begged my father to take me to it, and we didn't go because the night that it came out was the night a hurricane hit the country, and that drive-in has never worked since.
That's an understandable reason not to go, though. Yeah, I don't know if you can. There's actually still a drive-thru or drive-in in my hometown, and I liked it on Facebook just so every week I can know what they're playing. I haven't been in like a decade, but like I like that it's still there.
Oh, I don't think I'd ever want to go to a drive-in again at this point in time in my life. Like it's part of it is general not liking the idea of a drive-in, and part of it is me being a little bit snobby about the equipment I want to view my movie through.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I went to them a lot when I was in like junior high and high school, because junior high is just really cost effective way to
do it. Right, because it's dirt cheap.
Yeah.
You sneak like people in your trunk, you do crazy things anyways.
Yeah, and they would do like full car night where you could just put as many people as you could fit in your car and it would only be like $15 or something, which is just unheard of. You could bring your own food, you know, you'd stop at a pizza place. Oh, it was amazing. And then in high school, similar concept, and also the advantage of, you know, having a place where you could make out without your parents getting weird. I don't know where kids make out today, if not at drive-ins. Oh, God.
We're not going to tell parents about that because they already know about Beyonce.
They don't. Oh, God, imagine that. You know all about Beyonce and anacondas and whatever, and you don't know about the joys of drive-in makeouts. It's a brave new world, guys.
Children don't know. I'm looking forward to that conversation 10 years from now, me talking to a youngster, to a 13-year-old, and saying the term drive-in and them being lost.
I think that's the next thing we need to have in a Marvel movie. Like, we had a mixed cassette tape, and now we have to have a drive-in, just so that people in it, like, who are a little bit older can reminisce and be excited about something and then be like, yeah, kids today, you don't know anything.
I read in an interview that James Gunn actually had to bid on eBay for like the last 6 or last 10 Sony Walkmans that he didn't even know were functional. And they had to test to see which ones were functional to be like, okay, these are the ones we're using in the movie.
I buy that. I had a tape player way later than is acceptable, but I was still using them when I moved to New York, which was like 2001. So like, I hold on to old tech. I buy that those were hard to find.
My favorite piece of audio tech that I have owned that went out really quickly and I think would be a great ad for someone doing a nice little really unique nod joke would be mini disc players. I don't know if you know about these.
They did not catch on where I was. I'm aware of them, but I was not.
It didn't catch on anywhere. But I thought it was the greatest thing in the world because it was a step up from CDs because it could not skip. Like, you could try your hardest, you couldn't skip it. And you could track mark it, so it was better than cassettes. So it was like the best of both worlds.
We'll sigh.
Anyways, for the second time, I'm going to thank you so much for coming in and talking with me. I'm going to try and bookmark this podcast right here.
Jesus, I like that I gave you like a thing about how tangential this was and that we talked about tape decks and drive-thrus.
And you're listening to me talk to you right now and you're thinking Andrew's probably going to edit out that first one where he says thanks for talking. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to leave it there just so people get weird.
Just so people know, this is what it's like to talk to Christy Puchko. That's how it is, guys. You're welcome.
So that was the podcast. I once again, for the billionth time, I'd like to thank Christy for coming on and talking with me. If there's a movie I love talking about more than Batman, please let me know, because I'm not quite sure what it is. Thanks so much for listening. As always, you can hear this podcast over at gmanreviews.com, over through iTunes, over through Stitcher. Go to iTunes and rate and review this podcast, because it'll make me feel warm inside. It'll make me feel like sharing more. And don't you want me to share? I want to share. So thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful night. Someone brought it up to me that it feels strange that I always say goodnight at the end of my podcasts, because it's a podcast. I don't know when you guys are actually listening to me. So here we go. Have a good morning. Have a good afternoon. Have a good night. Have a good evening. Have a good sunset. Have a good sunrise. This is me trying to be a really corny radio host. Is it working? All right, guys, I'm out. Bye. If there's life after, we will see. So you can't go like a jerk. No, no. See the future and it will be. Wait a minute. Standing on the avenue, flashing loaded pistol to dumb.